Hello, this is David Rovix with another episode of Discussions with David. Since the pandemic hit and made touring and performing impossible, I've taken to broadcasting interviews with people who I can't visit in person anymore. They are live streamed most weekdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. GMT on various platforms, including the Facebook pages of Popular Resistance and KBOO Community Radio here in Portland, Oregon. All these interviews also then go out in podcast form afterwards, which you can find if you look up This Week with David Rovix on any podcasting platform or just go to davidrovix.com. I also do a live concert from my living room on the last Saturday of every month at 1 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. GMT. Today, we're spending the hour with musician, circus performer, and organizer Jennifer Bobette, who most people just know as Bobette. She is the accordion player in a fantastic folk punk band called the Union Thugs, who has a great new album out on Bandcamp right now with the best version of Anne Feeney's song War on the Workers ever recorded, in my opinion. She lives by the railroad tracks in Montreal, Quebec, and in her home city, she's more well known for being targeted for years by a massive gang of vicious sadists called the Montreal Police Department. Bobette, welcome to my little live stream show. Great to have you here.
Hi.
That's wonderful. And the banner behind you is, I love the banner behind you. It's all the world hates police and fascists. It's just putting everything into context.
Excellent. Exactly.
So this new album is just absolutely fantastic. And I don't know how long did it take to record? Was it a huge project in a studio or did it all come together quickly?
Actually, it was a long and painful project just because it took us 1 year and a half to release.
Mostly
the recording, re-recorded track by track, instrument by instrument. It took us like a good week. It went really, really good. And it was the first time we were doing a recording that was professional. We did a demo 2 years and a half ago, but that was homemade stuff. Now we invested some money in it to have a good recording. But and what took us the time to release it, it's because what was going with the recording, it was we wanted to build up a zine that was going with it, like so a full page zine of 24 pages to explain the struggles we are fighting for, explain the songs we are singing, playing, why we choose these songs, and there was too some text against fascism, against police brutality, etc., etc. So it's mainly the zine that took us the longer to build and to release, because we wanted to release everything at the same time. So in total, 1 year and a half. And I cannot be more fucking happy of the result. It's the comeback we're having are incredible. It's selling really fast. We print 500 copies and we don't have a lot left already. A lot of labels bought our CDs and our zines, and it's going good. It's important that our message that we want to pass is going through the sky, through the sea, everywhere. So
super happy. And the zine, so the zine and the CD are both in physical form, and they both come out together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you have the full zine, and when you don't have a CD case, we put the CD like in a transparency plastic little pocket, yeah. And so yeah. You open the zine, and the pocket is glued in the front page of the zine. So mainly, the zine is the cover of the CD.
Ah, fantastic. And did you have tour plans that were all ruined by the pandemic? Or
We have two awesome tours, and we still have our plane ticket that we don't know what to do with it. We were supposed to leave for 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks in Mexico. And we were playing in a convention of the Red and Anarchist Skinhead over there, the branch in Mexico. And we were playing other shows. And after that, we were coming back in Montreal. And 1 month after, we were going touring again for 3 weeks in Europe. We were doing, I think, Switzerland, France, and Germany. And everything fell apart. everything.
And you had all this stuff booked and all planned out.
Because when I'm saying that to people sometimes that are not a lot in the scene, like my mom or whatever, it's like, oh, it's not a big deal. You guys will book it again. But it's like booking these tours are not made like that. You don't like click your fingers and boo, you have two book tours. It's a lot of organization. Like, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So it took us like, what, I don't know, maybe 6 months to book these tours. So obviously we're not with everything going on right now, like everyone are saying, so when are you guys going to book these tours again? Like, well, we don't know. We're not going to spend another 6 months booking these tours when there's a pandemic and it might be getting fucked again. So
stand by. And people are talking about maybe doing gigs again, but with venues with 25% capacity or something like that, which is, I mean, the venues were already too small in the first place, and it was already a big problem, right? And the idea.
Yeah, well, we start playing shows again. Well, we're playing mainly, well, we obviously picket lines. This is our mainly goal. We did, we're doing still picket lines. We did a couple shows in parks, and we did one show in a bar, in a venue at small capacity. It's changing. It's not the same atmosphere. People cannot really dance together, and, you know, everyone was sitting. But just for us, going back on stage, when we're used to play 1 to 2 shows a week, well, it was like a relief. It was nice.
It felt
good. Oh my god, it felt good. I destroyed a plant that show, actually.
What's that?
I said I destroyed a plant that show, because it's just funny because on this stage, to my left, there was that huge, huge plant. And, you know, with my accordion, I have to go back and forth. And at the end of this set, everyone was laughing. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? And I just fucking look at the left. And I was like, oh, my God, I totally destroyed the plant by just moving my arm with the accordion. So, sorry.
Sacrificed for the art.
Yeah, well, I like plants. I didn't want to fucking hurt it, but whatever.
You didn't mean it. Yeah, there's some collateral damage.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the picket line you guys played at? Has there been much in the way of protests?
Okay, in Montreal, lately the protests are really, really dead. There is not a lot of protests. Well, there was a lot of Black Lives Matter protests. We got, I think, 3 protests in a row in a matter of 2 or 3 weeks that gathered like hundreds of thousands of people, actually. It was really, really great. And now the protests that are going on right now are the anti-mask protest.
Oh no.
No, these are the protests right now that's happening downtown. So I don't know. I'm letting them protest their stupidity. Now what we played, actually, I think it was at Olimel Factory. People were in picket lines for work conditions. And we filmed a video clip actually with the CSN, that is like one of the biggest group in Quebec, and we recorded a promotion video with the people that were doing the picket line. It was so fun. It was so fun because they changed our lyrics. So they chose one of our songs. They changed the lyrics to fit with their struggle. And so we were there in front. We learned, our singer learned the new lyrics. So we were there in front playing. And behind us, there was like, I don't know, 40 people with flags. And they were chanting all together the new lyrics. So it was actually a new experience for us, because usually we're just showing up on picket lines and we're just like playing to cheer them up. But that one, it was a live promotion video to promote the syndicalism and their struggle, and changing the lyrics and then participating as much as that with us. It was super fun experience.
Is that up on YouTube? It sounds great.
Oh yeah, it's up. I can send you the link maybe after. I would have to check. It's on the CSN Facebook page, actually.
CSN, and that's Canadian something something. Syndicalist
Yeah, it's Central, Syndical, and National, I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
That should be, yeah. People should be able to find it.
Yeah.
So this, there have been some stuff going on around Black Lives Matter, and the Montreal, the police in Montreal. I mean, is it sort of, is there statistically like a targeting, particularly of Black and Brown people in Montreal, like in everywhere else?
Well, yeah. Well, what's happening here in Montreal? It's we have Montreal North. That is mostly there that are gathered all the people from different origin. And it's mostly, it's been years and it's been years and years and years that people living in Montreal North are shouting out loud that they are getting profiling because of their color of skin. And so what happened with the Black Lives Matter movement recently, it's these people got aired better, if I can say. People were more giving them a ear. So what happened? It's like the union cop, La Fraternité du SPVM, they said, no, we're never targeting people for their origin of their color of skin. But the chief of the Montreal cops say, yes, it's true. It happened and we're gonna change that. And they say, like he said, he made like a big announcement, like it was 1 or 2 months ago. It's like, now times is gonna change. Now no one's gonna get arrested for their color of skin. And cops now will have to show proof of arrestation. It's like, is that supposed to be like that already? It's like, so like it was a big reveal, big fucking reveal for the cops and for the people of Montreal. And yeah, so that's it. It's pretty much what happened. Like the cops in Montreal stayed pretty quiet towards all that story. So yeah, there's not much to say about that. They know they are fucking up. And if we're just seeing the percentage of Asian or Black people in the cop service in Montreal, it's like small amount like that. I don't remember they showed the statistic, and it's ridiculous. I think on like 1,000 cops there is maybe 10 of them who are from different origins. So it's like,
wow.
Yeah,
but they didn't attack
everything. It say by itself that there's a systematic racial problem towards the communities in Montreal.
Yeah, but they laid low during the protests, during the Black Lives Matter protests. They didn't take the opportunity to attack the protesters like in most cities in the U.S.
No. Here it went really, really, really well, actually. And right. It's nice, you know, but they didn't attack us. It's Canada and United States for the Black Lives Matter protests are totally the opposite.
Right.
Totally the opposite.
So yesterday in The Guardian, I read a headline that the all the folks who are wrongly arrested, mass arrested at the 2010 G20 in Toronto. I was there,
yeah.
But I didn't get arrested. But they got a settlement and tens of millions of dollars, and everybody gets $24,000 who is arrested. That's good. Wait 10 years and you get a little bit of justice.
Yes, it's the minimum, 10 years. 10 fucking years to have justice. If you take 10 years divide by $20,000, it doesn't give much per year at the end, you know? So, and I know it's gonna, like, cause there's a bunch of court dates related to protests, especially the student spring protests in 2012, because they were doing mass arrestation like in G20, but they were doing mass arrestation after mass arrestation for no fucking reason. Like, we couldn't fucking leave the gathering spot. As soon as we were putting a foot on the street, we were hundreds of people getting arrested, detained for over 8 hours without having access to toilet, food, water. We were piled back for hours and hours, like suffocating, and to be released with a $700 ticket. I've been collectioning these fucking tickets for years. And so all these protests that didn't happen, well, now we are waiting to have some compensation. It's getting discussed in court, but, you know, it's not been 10 years. So maybe in 4 or 5 years, we're going to hear about it. But the G20 in Toronto, I don't know. There's a good documentary about it that I would suggest everyone to watch. It's called Into the Fire, and it's independent media that covered on live spot the protest over there, and it explained exactly what happened and why all these people that are getting arrested is getting all that money right now. But you know, when you think about that, and you know, I'm good to talk about it because I sue the cops, I want some money. Money is money. It doesn't buy all the psychological violence that we got through the years with these cops. You know, it doesn't erase that.
And the physical violence too. I mean, how's your collarbone?
And this is
you got they broke bones of yours. The police did.
Yeah, they broke my neck. Yeah, and so what's happening? It's like it doesn't excuse that. So you know, this is like it's really cool that like the city, blah blah blah. Like, how can I explain that? It's really like. Okay, like people are giving, like the city is giving money, the government's giving money in exchange for what we got, but fuck, man, it's not, I never got satisfied. I'm not satisfied. It's like, I did nightmares for years, like I got traumatized, and I'm like, okay, that money is gonna, it's gonna pay me my fucking psychiatric lesson that, you know, my psychological class that I'm doing and blah, blah, blah. So I have a personal big issue with all that because these people suffered for hours and for years after, and money right. cannot erase all that. So,
and can we, that suffering you talk about, Bobet, I mean, just like I was reading an article that some, I can't remember, translated from French in the press in Montreal that was writing about the police targeting of you. And the story reads a lot like the asylum cases that you hear at the border. Like, you know, I mean, minus the death squads, but like the same kind of targeting by the police or targeting by gangs that make people flee countries. I mean, they broke your bones. They went and visited you at your home at all kinds of random hours. They found you when you were outside somewhere and then started following you. And I mean, it's just incredible stuff for people to read who might not be familiar with the fact that police behave this way in the Western world.
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
I wonder if you could just, can you just talk about some of the experiences you've had with the Montreal police? I mean, just for the people out there that just have no idea.
Well, mainly I'm going to do the big lines because like my story, I can talk for hours about that, but it's mainly, I was 10 years ago, I started booking shows in a punk venue middle of downtown, and there was a back alley that all these punks were drinking beers while waiting for the show. And always the same fucking cops, the same two ones in bicycle were giving us tickets for drinking, and they start knowing me because I was putting these shows each Monday for 4 years, so they knew exactly, they start knowing me, and now the and it was okay, I guess, you know, they were not like harassing me, but there were, it's when the student spring in 2012 showed up 2 years later, they start showing me in protest, and I was always carrying a megaphone because I was part of the collective opposed to police brutality in Montreal, and it's a collective that don't like to do a lot of speeches. So I was me, I have a big mouth, I don't fucking care. I was like, man, give me the fucking megaphone, I'll do whatever fucking speeches it takes, and I have a lot to say. So during 2012, 13, 14, I was there, and I was not hiding myself, but everything I was doing was just doing speeches. You know, I never fucking went in the front to rock at them, even if I really wanted to. You know, I was that much target that they were just waiting for that kind of thing, you know? So, they start just targeting me, and they were more, because these two cops from the punk venue that was giving tickets were part of a group of tactic police officers, and so they were at 8 or 10 in totals. And so it's always the same group over the years. You know, it's like this group, it's these cops in it. So they start saying, oh, it's Babette, the girl that is putting on shows at Cafe Chaos. And they start just harassing me, like, for no fucking reason. They started really, really harassing me. And if I was in the middle of a protest, like literally in the middle of the protest, they were coming up to me and they were saying, yeah, one day we're gonna get you, Babette. And it became so huge. It went further than just these 8 or 10 cops. It was all the police stations at the plurials in all Montreal. I couldn't fucking walk in the streets. Like, hey, it's Babette, it's Babette. Like, I don't even know who the fuck you are. It's like, oh yeah, I'm a new police officer, and everyone is talking about you, man. It's like, so it was fucking horrible. And on May Day protest 2004, they decided they were done with me. They grabbed me in the middle of the parking lot at night when there was not even protest anymore. They broke my neck. They said horrible, horrible things about my personal life, and I was like, how the fuck did you guys know all these things? And they were like, yeah, man, we've been fucking spying your Facebook. And they even said it in court in front of the judge. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? They released me. I went at the hospital. They released me. They arrest me. And I didn't get any ticket. I didn't get any charge. I didn't got nothing. Nothing.
But
nothing.
They did give you tickets for things like making too loud of an announcement in a punk club. I mean, like, you did, like, there was some ticket you got for yelling at somebody for not bringing their amplifier, and yeah, like, and this was, you weren't even using a microphone, right? You're just yelling at somebody in your normal voice.
That day that they arrest me, that they said, we're done with you, you're going on tonight, I didn't get any acquisition. They released me. I went at the hospital, and I was like, all right, that's it. I'm done. I said, I'm going to fucking sue them. And not even 3 weeks after, I'm having a court date at the municipal court for a mass arrestation from 2012. And I'm there in the middle of the courtroom. There's these cops, the same fucking cops. They showed up. They grabbed me at 10. They put me out. They dragged me out by force out of the courtroom and arrested me with criminal charge of intimidation towards these police officers.
They arrested you for intimidating them.
Yeah. On that day in the municipal court. So I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. And this charge got dropped. I never went in court for that. So I was like, right, okay, this is game on. This is totally political profiling. So I sued him for political profiling, police brutality, illegal search, illegal arrestation, illegal detention, and arrestation without good reason. And I won all of it. The fucking court dates took 5 fucking years. They did everything to postpone the court date because I was suing them in two different instances. Because as I was saying earlier, the superior court, the suing I was going against them, it's only for money. So they have a little fucking note in their file, but it doesn't get them suspended. It doesn't get them fired. It doesn't get them nothing. It's the city giving me money. And I was like, yeah, that's not satisfying me. I want them suspended. So that's why I'm the only person in Canada that went in both ways. I sued them in both ways, and I won.
Great.
I won in both ways.
We got the police
ways.
Suspended.
Yeah, 8 days without salary, which is huge. In Quebec, here, it's huge. It's one of the worst sentences you can get, and there's not a lot of cops, because if you see statistically in the police ethics courts, there's over per year, over 1,000 complaints against police officers, and on 1,000 cops being accused in police ethics court, there's at the end, there's maybe 5 to 10 cops that are getting charged. So, the cops,
they should be fired for this kind of behavior. They should be punished.
Don't fucking tell me that. But like what they try to do is they try to postpone the police at the court, which happened. They succeeded because their game plan was they were sure they would win in the superior court. So they wanted to use the judgment in superior court and police ethics court too. So the judge like, hey, see, we went in superior court and we won. So, but it turned against them because I won. I have the judgment to bring in police ethics court. And when we showed up in police ethics court, finally, they objected the deposit of the judgment. They said, no. Yeah. The lawyers of the cops, because their game was like failing all the fucking way. And I was like, and finally the judgment got accepted as a proof, evidence, and they got they got fucking suspended. But they tried to cancel literally the court because one of the cop, while he was giving his testimony, he said he felt intimidated. But one person that was in the audience that didn't was saying not even one word. That was so they tried so many things. That's why it took so many years, so fucking many years. And
somebody,
you know,
in the audience was like looking at the cop in an intimidating way, like a glaring perhaps. Like what was
like, man, and I don't know how you were seeing that, because the cops were looking at the judge and the person was in the back. I don't know how his eyes were turning all over the place to see what was happening in the back. And you know, like me, I saw a psychologist person after, because I was having a lot of traumas. So when the cops learned that we were depositing as a evidence, how can I say that? Just a bilan, like our meetings that we had, like they hired a psychiatric. Yeah, man.
So they could talk about how you traumatized them.
Yes, to prove the other way that no, that girl didn't got traumatized. She didn't got any psychological sequel. And I spent afternoons in small office with these fuckers that were trying to go into my head. I were fucking getting paid by the cops to try to prove something different. It was horrible.
That you're not traumatized.
It was fucking horrible. The fucking court dates. It lasts for, I don't remember, 7 or 8 days, all fucking days. I was living there. I was fucking crying. It's like, it's exhausted. And seeing these cops that assault you mentally, physically for so many years in front of you all the fucking time. And them, they were laughing. They were passing them, so between them, some small notes and laughing. And even their own fucking lawyer, they were like, dude, like, stood up, like, come on, man, like, so yeah, horrible. But wow. I went through it and I fucking won.
And
it's opening a lot of doors.
Too. There was huge support for you. I mean, you became, I mean, they're as big as the protests were in 2012 around the tuition fees and stuff. There were also really big protests against the police brutality, specifically against their brutalizing of you.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that was like, yeah. And so
I've been helping people since so many years for their fights against police brutality. So I think people were just, well, it's payback now. We're going to fucking show that girl some support, because I've been showing them some support, I guess. I don't know.
And also they could see that what was happening to you was just completely insane, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're attuned to Discussions with David, which goes out live most weekdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. GMT on the Facebook pages of Popular Resistance, KBOO Community Radio, and elsewhere. You can find it in podcast form if you look for This Week with David Rovics on any podcasting platform, as well as at patreon.com/DavidRovics and at davidrovics.com. I wonder if you can, like, this the movement that was happening in 2012 was really, like, not happening anywhere outside of Quebec, and a lot of people, especially in the US, didn't even hear anything about it. I mean, they know nothing about this whole huge hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. You know, yeah, it was just, like, not in the news at all, unless you knew people in Quebec.
Wow.
But I wonder, which is really surprising, I know. But can you tell people about what was going on then? I mean, it was a really massive and very successful movement to stop the increase in tuition fees.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you said it. It was to stop that. And so it lasts for, oh my God, 8 months. But 8 months, like a radical 8 months with 1 to 2 to 3 protests a day. It was all over the fucking place. And I really like how it was organized, because you were having a protest in the day early for families. You were having a protest more around 4 or 5 for people that were finishing work that wanted to show their support. And you were having the night protests, which ones was more for the anarchists, the autonomous people, the Black Bloc, and the more radical people, which was always getting turned into violence, starting mostly from the cops, obviously. And there was, like, to these people with casserole, like the pot that you can smash on their pot, on their balcony, each day at 8 p.m. So that movement spread more than beyond protest, actually. And what I like about that, it's it didn't gather only students. It gathered everyone. Everyone was in, like, everyone was paying attention, everyone was listening, which was really, really, really interesting. And obviously there is, like, some government deputies, I don't know how you say that in English, if it's that, but that took advantage of the struggle to go in protest and say, hey, what's up, vote for me, because I'm there with the youngs. And so that got it to a huge turnout for political reviews. And man, that's such a long time ago. You asked me 8 years later, so yep. I'm just trying to remember.
I know, it seems like forever ago. Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot that's happened since then.
For 8 months, it went all over towns, man. And it was not only in Montreal, it was in each city. There was each city at, like, 8 p.m., there was a protest somewhere. In bunch of cities, and it was, like, always hundreds and thousands of people. It was, like, our biggest protest in all Quebec history was totally during 2012, totally.
And it started out as just students, and then it expanded after that?
What I mean by expanded, it was always about the fees, tuition in school. It's just... the reception, I don't know, the reception of the cops towards this protest start having question about mostly the rubber bullets, the you know, all these, the tear gas. So I'm saying it spread more in that way, that people that don't pay attention to these things usually were sitting on their couch and were seeing in the news, because it was always live footage, and they were seeing that cops were always out of fucking control. And it's like, why using all these weapons against students that are just asking free school? So it's like on that side that we got a lot of popularity. And
it's really, I mean, the story, I've been thinking about it a lot, not just because I was going to be talking to you, but because I'm thinking that it sort of parallels so much of what's happening throughout the United States in every city in the country these days. But it was like, I mean, this when people talk about, oh, this is unprecedented, the word unprecedented is used a lot to describe a lot of things about the pandemic and about how the extent of the protests across the U.S. these days. But what was going on in Montreal was like, I mean, it was absolutely massive and so sustained. And I mean, really, I'm not sure if there's anything quite like it that's been happening here also in the U.S. in the past few months. I mean, how big the protests were in Montreal and how, you know, how much it was happening every day for so many months, as you described. And then it was, so you're saying it was like different kinds of protests were happening at different times of the day, which is also kind of like what's going on here too. It's, that's very.
But it was not only protests, like, because there was public assembly, like students were voting the strike, you know, people were voting the strike, and there were some students that were still going in class with scabs. And so there was people that were dressed all in black, and their work was making sure going class to class and stop the classes. It's like, we're on strike. We voted for a strike. You guys will not do that. So, during these 8 months, there was a lot of students that were trying still to go to school, and it was literally impossible because it was getting shut down physically.
That is so interesting. That really, it brings up something I've been thinking a lot about, is how so many successful social movements do involve some degree of that kind of tactic, like some kind of like, we need to be together here, and there's some consequences if you don't, if you're not in solidarity.
Totally. All tactics are really, really good, and it worked really well. It worked really fucking well.
What happened with those classes? The students and the teachers just stopped trying to hold classes.
Because the people that were saying stop, you know, they were staying, and they were not letting the teacher keep going his classes or her classes until everyone was leaving the class, including the teacher.
And what happened to those folks who were doing those kinds of disruptions? Were they attacked by the police?
No. We're like, what? Because it was always on random times, and because it was so quick, police never had time to show up. It was not planned, and like at 8:30 p.m. we're all doing that. It was always at random times of the day. So no, cops never got a chance to go stop that, actually, because it was so spontaneous, so quick that, yeah.
There's a lesson in that too, huh? That's, I mean, agreeing on a spontaneous, or on a tactic, and then spontaneously acting on it without making a big, here's when the showdown is, here's the plan. Because, I mean, here in Portland, it's been like every night there's direct action groups that put up posts on Twitter saying the fight begins at 9 p.m., basically, you know. So it's like, if you're going to fight the cops, show up here, and that's where it'll be happening, you know. So it's like, everybody knows, including the cops, obviously.
Yeah. You know? Yes, exactly.
So do you have any, what do you think you might do after the pandemic is over? Do you think you might actually organize a tour? Is that going to be, are you talking about it, or are people talking about the future? Like this has an end, or is it's more like we have no idea?
We have no idea. Like that here in Montreal, there's no shows that started yet. In outside of Montreal, I went to see a couple shows in venues, punk shows. But in Montreal, we're like always the last. And you know me, I run a fucking venue here, and there is no shows. And I'm like, But there's no plans. No one is making plans. And now we can, like, the government announced that we can book shows at 250 people with 50% capacity. But no one is doing it. No, I don't know why. I know why I'm not doing it. I'm not gonna say it on live on whatever, but you know, I'm waiting for other venues to start booking shows, but not so far. Montreal is like on a huge standby.
And I mean, the venue there, Trackseed, right? Trackside?
Yeah.
Trackside. Trackside. So it's just like the English Trackside by the Trackside. Yeah. I didn't realize.
Because the venue is at the Tracks. Yeah. On Trackside, Trackside, Trackside. Play on word stuff. Anyway.
And it's only, I mean, it's basically a room that like 50 people can fit in if they really are friendly with each other. I mean, yeah. maybe 70 if they're totally packed in like sardines. But then the idea of like 50% capacity on a venue like that, which is probably, if it were officially announced what the capacity is, it would probably be like capacity of 30 or something. And so, I mean, like, it's just so totally impractical, this idea of doing a show for 15 people.
There's no point at all of doing that. So no. And that's why, like, there's like, you know, catacombs was a big venue in Montreal where it got shut down. It closed at the end of last year, and it sucks because that, you know, that venue could manage to start redoing show. But now the only venues that are still open in Montreal for the underground scene are all really small venues, so there's nothing we can do about that. And no one knows, man, when we're gonna start having shows again. But one thing I know, it's everyone start going crazy,
right?
Including myself.
Yeah. But really, literally, I mean, there's a lot of serious mental anguish, a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety. It's really a big issue, huh?
And
but in Canada, generally, what's that?
A lot of domestic violence.
Right.
It got proven statistically during the since the beginning of the pandemic, domestic violence got really up, and that's not good.
No. But then in Canada, across Canada, everybody is getting, almost everybody is getting some money from the government every month during the pandemic. So you're not looking at a big eviction crisis like we are here.
No. I don't know, but I don't think so. But no, so far, so good. Everyone have money, because like me, I literally lost my job because of the pandemic, because I'm doing carpentry for a music festival, which not happening at all. So, you know, I'm receiving that money, but there's a lot. Well, this is the struggle, because the government is giving right now and money to everyone who is asking it. They don't look up. They don't look up if you really lost a job because of the pandemic. You just apply. It takes 2 seconds, and 2 days after, you're receiving money into your bank account. But what's happening, it's right now, there's a lot of people that are hiring, that are like, there's a lot of people that are looking for people to work, and there are difficulties because everyone rather receive free money and not doing anything. So that's why it's like kind of fucked up situation kind of thing.
It's interesting. I mean, if you want people staying home and not spreading a virus, and then giving them $2,000 a month is a great way to do that, because obviously they don't need to work if they got their expenses covered.
Yeah, but on the other end, the businesses start working again, and like, to run stores, well, you need employees, you need people. So that's why it's really like, people that are having running small stores are really pissed off, and I kind of understand that. It's like, well, we have difficulty to hire, to make run our little public market, because everyone rather receiving free money and doing nothing. So, and this goes until December. They just announced that money was supposed to stop in December at the end of this month, and it got delayed and until the rest of the year. So let's see what's happening. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and students are receiving money, and
right.
And old people too. It's separate in three different thing of money. Everyone who wants money have money.
It's very interesting. I mean, here, you know, in the US, we're looking at 40 million people getting evicted from their homes by the end of September. 40 million people.
Are you kidding me? Well, here there's a law, there's a bylaw that kind of that passed that during the pandemic, no eviction
across Canada.
I cannot say across Canada, but across Quebec, yes.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, here in the U.S., it's been by state. Some states are banning evictions.
United States is so fucked, man.
Oh, it is so fucked.
I don't understand that country.
No, but it's interesting living just to the north of this huge country called the United States. Because, I mean, you must inevitably, the comparisons are constant, right? Because there's people from the U.S. coming over and bands going to tour in the U.S. And it's, yeah.
Yeah,
but one thing about have you toured in Europe before, or was this tour that you were going to do that was going to be the first tour in Europe?
Yeah, it was the first. Yeah, we've always been touring in Ontario. We booked a tour in United States. We got a refuse at the border. So we've been touring only in Canada so far.
In the U.S. tour, did you have all the legal papers done, or were you just trying to wing it and just go?
We were having legal papers, actually. We were having a legal paper saying we were going to play a benefit show and that we were not getting paid. And at the border, they stopped us and they say the only reason they said it's that, well, someone somewhere is making money. And. Oh. And yeah, that's it. That's the only reason they gave us. And we got fingerprints. We got a pat search everywhere. And we got categorized like terrorists just because we tried to go fucking play one show in the United States. They like seriously, you're gonna take our fingerprints like just for that? Like, we didn't try to smuggle drug, like just having like instrument and going play a show and
they looked your name up in their computer, then that, I mean, have you ever successfully gotten into the United States, Bobette? Have you tried other times to come?
No.
I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot here on the live internet.
Yeah, I was thinking I went in the United States once in 2011 and I never tried back. I don't want to go in the United States.
No.
No.
I'm curious with your arrest record, you might have a hard time getting in anyway.
Probably. Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. But at what point? I don't know. And I don't know how ready I am to know about it.
But if you got gigs in Europe, touring in Europe is much better anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah. Some people in Europe, I've been hearing from people in Europe who are making plans for the future. Like in Germany and Scandinavia, they're starting to plan for the future, which just to me sounds like a crazy idea. I don't know if the whole country's going to be on fire next week. You know, the idea of planning for the future. I mean, but you're not hearing from people about future. It's all nobody's. Yeah.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not right now. Like, you know, I was gone 3 weeks and I didn't know what was happening. I came back yesterday and I just learned that the government here in Quebec is already preparing the second wave. And the second wave will not attack the same group of people. Like, mass media are bullshitting what the fuck they want into people's head, and people's will fucking receive that and believe that. And now, so I'm shutting down my brain towards this pandemic because it's just like, I find it ridiculous. And I'm taking my measurement, I'm wearing my mask, blah, 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 blah. But I don't want to know any further. I don't want to know what the government is planning for the second wave and blah, 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 what they think. Because at that point, honestly, it's alienation. Totally alienation. It's like putting stuff into people's head and all the time. And people will believe, right now, people will believe what the fuck they want. And you know, it's like they said once at TV, it can be transmitted towards your dog, and now everyone is freaking out, dogs cannot approach each other. It's like, you know what I mean? But there was no
you're gonna stop the dog from sniffing each other's butt,
catch the virus through the dog. But it's that. And me, I'm so fucking sick of that. So I decided since I'm back yesterday, I'm just like, I'm shutting my brain off towards that pandemic. And I'm waiting.
What about mutual aid activities around domestic violence or anything else? Has there been a lot of that going on since the lockdown started?
Well, I know there's a lot of people. Well, I don't know a lot what going on towards that, but I know, like me on my Facebook, I'm seeing a lot of posts since the beginning of the pandemic. It's like, hey, if you're having, if you're receiving some domestic violence, just write me a sentence like, I like tomatoes, and that's mean. I know that something is up. So I know people in the community are way more alert. Like way more alert, but further that, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't know. I just know statistically, with the people that are working on phone with domestic violence people, that it's got increased by a lot. But at one point, the work is done. I don't know.
And you just got back from a camping trip. Have you thought about moving out of the city? I mean, you know, these days, a lot of people are leaving.
You don't understand. Yes. No? Yes. It's I have an awesome possibility of moving out by the sea at 6 hours away from here. And the only thing that holds me back, it's my band. Because at that point, I would be ready to give up trackside to go to move out. It's, because...
6 hours would be a long drive to come host a show at Trackside every week.
Yes. Well, I could still do some work to distance, but you know, it's been 10 years I'm booking shows. You know, it's been 10 years I'm there. And it's like, I'm never going to block myself from awesome opportunity for me because I have a venue, you know, like a venue can be run without me or I can help from distance, you know. But it's mostly my band that hold me back. I'm like, I'm not ready to leave my band. If it was, honestly, if it was a random band that were playing in show and that's it, I wouldn't have any trouble quitting that band. But Union Thugs is not that at all. It's a real fucking struggle that we're bringing into action with our music. And that it's like, it's my life. It's so important for me. That I'm not ready to give that up. I'm not. But yeah, I thought of it. Oh my God. I'm trying not to think too much about it to not make a stupid move.
That'd be a nice punk rock vacation home for all kinds of folks on the track side.
Yes.
What's the town? Is it a particular place that you love?
It's called the Trois Pistoles. And that's why it hurt because I was just there at the last of my vacation and I was working on the new venue that would be over there. So I was like, oh my God, like, do I'm investing myself in a new venue? And so, yeah. So
there will be a venue in this town.
Yeah.
A venue in this little town, six hours away. Is it a really small town?
Oh yeah! Oh yes! It's really well where it is. It's called it's River Trois Pistoles. So it's not even in the city of Trois Pistoles, and I think it's a 4th Street.
Oh, that river! What's the town called? River something.
River Trois Pistoles.
Yeah, I think I went there. You go through that town on the way to Quebec. No, not no, like if you're driving from not on the way to Quebec City.
No, it's on the way to Gaspésie. It's halfway between Montreal and Gaspésie.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, because if a town has at least a few thousand people in it, then it can be big enough to support a punk venue, it seems. I mean, it can be done if it's far enough from other cities, right? It has to be far enough away so that people aren't driving to Montreal to catch shows, right?
Yeah, exactly. But no, I love Fatal. I love Trackside. I love my band. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take more vacation than just running away from everything.
Yeah, that's good. Vacations. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Bobette, it's been such a pleasure having you on my little live stream show.
Thank you. It was so much fun.
Yeah, really. Thank you. Yeah, it's so good to catch up with people because I never get to talk to anybody who above the age of 4, you know, unless I, you know, make a point of it, you know. I have small children, so you get into this bubble, you know, where you have to be very purposeful if you want to have adult conversation.
Well, I hope you're doing well, and thank you a lot for the interview. Yeah. It was nice.
Yeah, thank you. Take care. See you again.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. This has been a conversation with Jennifer Bobette in Montreal. And you can find all of these discussions archived in various places, including on my YouTube channel at youtube.com/drovix in the Discussions with David playlist. You'll also find them all in podcast form if you look for This Week with David Rovix on any podcasting platform, or just go to davidrovix.com. If you want to support my broadcasting efforts, you're most welcome to become a patron at patreon.com/davidrovix. And incidentally, the Union Thugs also have a Patreon page. And you can find all of these broadcasts there on my on Patreon for anyone to download, along with some patron-only offerings as well, such as my 16-part audio memoir. If you're in the Portland area, please go to artistsforrentcontrol.org and sign up to receive text notifications so you can be part of Portland Emergency Eviction Response when the investment banks that own half of this city start trying to evict so many of our neighbors. If you want to help make my next album a multi-instrumental success, check out davidrovix.com/pandemic sessions. Remember, don't pay the rent. Don't be afraid of your neighbors. Mutual aid will get us through. Bye for now.